Stuttgartcast, the German football pod brought to you by The Athletic. Today it's mailbag time. Christoph Biermann and I will be answering your questions on Borussia Dortmund's latest troubles, Bayern running out of steam, and the German FA's showdown talks with Joachim Löw this week. Before that, we'll quickly look back on an entertaining VfL Wolfsburg game. Yes, that's what it says here. Another Schalke defeat and 80s joke alert. Find out what happened to Diva Eintracht on Saturday. Yes, Max Factor. All of this in Stuttgart. And don't forget, our fantastic Black Friday offer is still running until the end of this week. You can get all of The Athletic's amazing content for just £1 per month. Go to theathletic.com/StuttgartPod to sign up. Okay, Christoph, before we get into the readers' questions, what games did you watch at the weekend and who impressed you and who didn't?
Interestingly, I was pretty impressed by the Wolfsburg against Bremen game because it was highly entertaining, 5-3 for Wolfsburg. I think we a bit unfairly labeled as boring until now. Or maybe fairly we labeled them as boring, but yeah. they weren't on... On Friday, and I saw the Union playing Frankfurt, and also the next defeat of Schalke, looking hopeless, more hopeless any week, and some of the games on a Sunday that were pretty underwhelming, especially the goalless draw between Leverkusen and Hertha. I think Hertha was very happy to get a point there. And then there was a draw 1-1 between Mainz and Hoffenheim.
Yeah.
And yes, well, I saw a lot of highlights and Borussia Dortmund. I think we will have to talk about Borussia Dortmund.
I think we will, but I've got a feeling that one or two readers might have questions about Dortmund and Lucien Favre. So let's leave that for the moment. Let's talk something a little bit more uplifting. And that was, of course, as you said, Wolfsburg's win. Wolfsburg scored all the goals that they haven't scored all season in this particular game. Was it just a one-off, or are they now suddenly clicking and we'll see more of them? It still strikes me as a side that has a lack of creativity, especially in midfield. What do you think?
I think Werder made them look very good on the one hand side, but I think there is a development at Wolfsburg. And if you go back for some weeks, there was this interesting conflict between coach Glasner and head of sport Jörg Schmadtke. And you got the impression that Schmadtke wanted to put his coach under some pressure. It was pretty open that they were like disagreeing on some issues concerning sports. And after that, I think it's you could see a development that Wolfsburg looked sharper, actually. Maybe it was a result from this surprisingly open discussion, and but on the other hand side, maybe it took some time for Wolfsburg to get into the season. If we remember, they dropped out early out of the Europa League, didn't qualify for it, had a slow start, some draws. But now they, after 9 games, they are one of the two undefeated teams and look increasingly interesting. And also that they gave away 3 goals. I think it was a bit more of bad luck because... It wasn't like as if Werder was playing them apart and got some easy goals. So altogether, I was pretty impressed by Wolfsburg.
And there is actually a question that we should ask you from the reader. Keki K, is asking, how should Werder try to improve their defense? And what's the solution up front with Osako, Sargent and Selke?
I think they did it, actually. I mean, their defense looks more stable than last season. I mean the game in Wolfsburg wasn't proof of that, but altogether their defensive performance has increased I would say almost dramatically compared to last season, but still it's a long way. So I think Werder will be happy if they keep the distance from the relegation zone. They have 11 points now. That's okay. and maybe surprisingly okay to compare to what we could expect from them. But I think we shouldn't hope them to turn into a rock solid in defense team, on, and on the other hand side, on a highly entertaining forward going team. So I think they have to muddle through more or less through the season and develop slightly. And I think they're doing that.
Right. What about Union Berlin? 3-3 draw against Frankfurt, which at the same time felt exhilarating and disappointing. Disappointing because they were 2-0 up, exhilarating because they managed to score late on, or fairly late on, to rescue a point. And Max Kruse having another of those barnstorming games. Are we now at a stage that a draw against Frankfurt is almost a setback for this Union team?
No. Oh no, I wouldn't say so. They had this fantastic first 15 to 20 minutes where they were 2-0 up and could have been 3 or 4-0 up because Eintracht Frankfurt wasn't on the pitch at that time. But then you could see the quality of Frankfurt as well. They turned it around, so it was 3-2, and then it the equalizer came from this fantastic shot from Max Kruse from outside the box into the top right corner of Frankfurt's goal. But I think everybody is pretty satisfied with what's going on at Union Berlin, even in this match. Still, they have many players missing with injuries and players being ill. So, and I think nobody at the Alte Försterei is expecting them to be a only halfway serious contender for one of the European places. So everybody is really happy to be so far away from the relegation zone, playing nice, interesting football, having a development here compared to the last season. So everything's fine at Union right now.
Okay, well, I think you're playing mind games with us, Christoph. I think you're not really admitting just how close Union might be to the Europa League places, maybe the Champions League places.
Yeah, but we have to look on the fixture list. They had an interesting fixture list where they played all the bottom teams at the beginning of the season, and now they have to play Bayern and Dortmund and Leipzig and Leverkusen, and so things will turn difficult for them in the next week, and so they are happy for every point they can pick up.
Well, before we get to the readers' questions, I think we should have a word on Schalke, and I guess that word is bad or horrific or terrible or any other word you want to choose, really. But at the same time, I thought they actually held it together reasonably well for a certain amount of time. They didn't fall completely apart. It wasn't a collapse. They, I think, within their own means, did as well as they could almost. Is that, Christoph, maybe the most worrying thing, that a decent Schalke team, by their own standards, still has absolutely no chance to get any points against Borussia Mönchengladbach?
Yeah, and we can also turn it around, because there were parts, especially in the first half, where Borussia Mönchengladbach was playing, they were appalling compared to their standards, and still they almost easily managed to win against Schalke. So yeah, my fantasies for Schalke winning a game, I don't know where to get them. They scored a nice goal. Maybe I have a lack of imagination. They scored a nice goal, a really nice goal, set up by Marc Uth and scored by Benito Raman. And they played, let's say, 25 very good minutes in the first half. But then they still concede so easy goals. Yeah, I think it's devastating also for the team, because it's like, as you said, we're okay compared to what we have seen, and still we are so far away from even only getting a point. Whatever, however you want to label it, it's depressing.
Schalke still bottom of the table after that 4-1 defeat at Borussia Mönchengladbach, still without a win in 25 games now. It's getting perilously close to the Tasmania Berlin all-time record of 31 Bundesliga games without a win. But Bielefeld almost as bad. They only have 4 points. They lost against Leipzig 2-1 at the weekend, and Mainz dropping into the bottom three as well, because Cologne surprisingly won against Dortmund. And I guess, Christoph, that's where we have to start. We have loads of questions on Borussia Dortmund and Lucien Favre, who's your favourite manager. Pete H is asking, "Hi Rafa, what is going on with Borussia Dortmund? I've been following them closely since Sancho joined, but never really get to see them play. So for me, there is a strange disconnect between the talent they have and the disappointing results they keep posting. Is there a common denominator in the defeats? Inconsistency of youth? An attitude problem perhaps? Or are they simply not as strong as they appear to be on paper? What do you think?"
What do you think? The question was addressed to you, Rafa. And then I jump in.
Well, it's for both of us. Okay, I'll start. So I think all of these factors come into play. Youth is a problem when it comes to being consistent. Attitude seems to be a problem, because I think Lucien Favre repeatedly fails to rouse his players and give them the sharpness and that focus and that determination that you need, especially in these kind of games against inferior opposition. And perhaps they're not quite as strong as they appear on paper, because there are still weaknesses in the squad. I still think that the right back position is pretty bad. I mean, Thomas Meunier is giving them a bit of consistency and a bit of experience, but in a footballing side, his limitations become quite apparent. I think still Roman Bürki is perhaps not quite at the top level of goalkeeping in the Bundesliga, let alone in Europe. And there's undoubtedly also an issue with some of the tactical setups. Lucien Favre, of course, has changed things. Now they're mostly playing with a back four again, but they basically went one half season playing a back three, which then made them fairly passive without the ball, because the natural instinct is to just fall back and be a five almost. And I think without that midfield pressure, without that energy and that determination to win the ball back, Dortmund are not as good and not as strong as they could be. So these are all the issues, and not all of it comes down or back to Favre, but Favre is probably the easiest lever to pull, the easiest button to push, which is why we will see that change.
If you look at some numbers, for example, so Borussia Dortmund, they got 9 goals against them in 9 games of the Bundesliga season so far. And 5 came from set pieces, and remarkably 2 against Cologne. So they both came came after corners in this case. And every team is prepared for what comes from the opponent set pieces, and that's what also Roman Bürki said. And still, we had the almost 2 identical situations when Skiri from Cologne was almost easily could almost easily score after a corner. And I think that has to do with a lack of concentration, a lack of determination to defend your goal. And when we look at another number that I found interesting, Tobias Escher, one of the tactic bloggers here in Germany, brought that up. He said that Borussia Dortmund has lost 14 games under Favre in the Bundesliga. 4 defeats came from Borussia Dortmund, from Bayern Munich, 2 came from Hoffenheim, and 1 from Leverkusen, but 7 from relegation candidates. And that again has to do with a distinct level of determination and concentration, because honestly, you can't lose if you're Borussia Dortmund. You can't lose against Cologne on a normal or halfway normal day. And they did, and we in the last weeks we had the impression that Borussia Dortmund was back on track, playing a winning 5-2 at Berlin, easily beating Bruges in the Champions League and so on. So there were improvement in the performance, and I think that was also the impression that Borussia Dortmund had themselves about them. So Michael Zorc was talking about that he could see the greed in the team, but there was no greed winning the match against Cologne again. And it's a major setback this season. And so as you said, it's a mix. Has to do with mentality, yes, and has to do partly with the youth of some of the players, but and it has also to do with the attitude of the coach. And I think what we will see next season is a new Borussia Dortmund coach, no doubt about it.
Yes, and there are lots of questions about who that new coach could be. Paul Mainwaring is asking, if Dortmund do the sensible thing, is the first choice Rose? And do they look at Jesse Marsch? What do you think of Pochettino as next Dortmund manager? It's Christopher Sullivan's question. I think it's a match made in heaven. He gets the next step, club with expectations to challenge the league, and fits Dortmund's style perfectly. Right, I'm going to start with the Pochettino suggestion. I don't think that's going to happen for two reasons. First of all, I think Mauricio Pochettino is still looking for something a little bit more glamorous, a little bit more established after having this project at Spurs. I don't think he wants to necessarily be in a challenging position again of being up against a superpower and trying to overcome the odds. I think he'd much prefer, a little bit like Thomas Tuchel, to actually be in charge of a team that has a genuine opportunity to and almost a expectation to win trophies. And also from Dortmund's point of view, I think there is a certain reluctance to take the type of manager who would probably come with five or six backroom staff, all speaking Spanish, and sort of giving the keys to the club to somebody from abroad and from the outside who they probably can't quite fully control or mold. And they are quite opinionated there in Dortmund. And I think, as we've seen with Favre, they like to almost kind of suggest things to their manager, and I just don't see that happening with Pochettino. So that's an outside chance. Rosa and Marsch, I think Rosa, if he is available, if he can be persuaded to leave, is probably the most realistic contender, and I'm sure that Dortmund would love to have him. The question is, does he want to make that step and move from one Borussia to the other? I think Jesse Marsch is probably in the conversation as some kind of backup solution, but not that high up the list. I'm not sure they're fully convinced about him in Dortmund and elsewhere. Christoph, any quarrels, any problems with what I said, or do you agree with everything?
No, I totally agree with what you were saying. So Pochettino, I think there is, in general, there is a reluctance among German clubs, especially German top clubs, to sign coaches that don't speak German. So they don't have to be necessarily from Germany, as Peter Bosch, for example, who comes from Holland, but he speaks German well, but in general, it's not what top clubs want to have. And I think Marco Rose is, as far what I heard, their number one choice so far. But you're right, it's difficult in a way. I would think that Rose might be tempted, because if he gets Borussia Mönchengladbach to the next round of the Champions League, that would be a enormous success. But this would also be the kind of glass ceiling for Borussia Mönchengladbach. And there is another glass ceiling at Borussia Dortmund, much higher. And I think that Rose and his team will be very interested if Borussia Dortmund seriously approaches them. And I think maybe Borussia Dortmund would be even ready to pay a kind of transfer fee for Rose, because he will be still under contract in Mönchengladbach next summer. And Jesse March is, he might fit from the footballing ideas on the one hand side, but there is also another aspect. I think he is still too much labeled as an RB coach, a Red Bull coach, and I think that wouldn't be so well accepted among Borussia Dortmund supporters. Rose comes from the same background, but now he has lost it at Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, he's been de-contaminated.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Borussia Dortmund will do everything to get Rose.
Yeah. And there are rumors that he has actually a release clause in his contract. How much that is for and whether Dortmund can persuade him to move is of course another question. Another manager who doesn't really speak German, but a version of it, I guess, is Urs Fischer, heavy Swiss accent. Will he be a manager in demand soon? John L. is asking, and I think that one is for you, Christoph.
I think Urs Fischer would actually be able to do this. I think he is still very much underestimated in what he can do. But I think on the other hand side, it doesn't fit so well into the story of greatness and so that Borussia Dortmund wants to tell, because he is a publicly, I wouldn't say he is shy, but he is his dry in his public appearance, and maybe they would have the feeling to get another version of Lucien Favre, although that's completely wrong. They are completely different characters, but I think they in a way he is probably not glamorous enough for Borussia Dortmund.
The first time I interviewed Neymar, he was 14.
He was pretty much famous, approaching household name status before he'd even played for the Santos first team.
Barca should have been better prepared. They really did not have a contingency plan for if Neymar were to leave.
You had the French president, Emmanuel Macron, calling it really good news on the day.
Without selling Coutinho for that amount of money, Liverpool's recent history would be very, very different.
But then again, Neymar changed the whole dynamic.
I'm Adam Leventhal, and this is Beyond the Headline, Neymar, the transfer that changed the world. Over the next three episodes, we will explore Neymar's €222 million move from Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain, a transfer that changed the game not only because it more than doubled the world transfer record, but explain how the ripple effects made it arguably the most significant transfer in the history of the game. That's Beyond the Headline, available wherever you get your podcasts or get it ad-free via the Athletic app.
We have here a question about Eintracht Frankfurt, and it comes from Toby Gillis. Eintracht, discuss, what on earth are we? You know, I was thinking about this, and of course, Frankfurt have a reputation going back decades as being inconsistent, capricious, the diva, people in Germany used to call them. And I think that basically this is just a story that people tell themselves of a team that is mid-table. A mid-table team will have good days, they'll have bad days. If they only had good days, they'd be a top table team. If they only had bad days, they'd be a relegation candidate. But because Frankfurt are neither, people dress it up as some kind of character deficiency. I just think it's just a natural consequence of where they are financially. The teams that they've had over the years, there's always been a little bit of interest and a little bit of quality, but never quite enough to get them over the line. And this Frankfurt team are no different after that fantastic Europa League run. They've kind of come back down to a more prosaic level because they've lost
their best three players and the replacements haven't really worked out. I think that's really the story.
There might be a bit of feeling of disappointment because you mentioned this Europa League run. And I think in a way, although everybody was thinking, yeah, we're living the dream now, there is a bit of disappointment that there is no continuation of this dream. And they have some fantastic players in their team. I think Kamada, the Japanese, is great. André Silva, one of their strikers, is fantastic. And also Martin Hinteregger, this very special Austrian defender, is actually very good. But when you look at the match at the Alte Försterei on Saturday, I think you could see it all. You could see the quality, but you could also see where the quality is lacking. Maybe in defense, they also Kevin Trapp didn't look very convincing. So yeah, they looked like a very interesting, sometimes in some parts, highly entertaining to watch team. But as you said, as a mid-table team. And I think that's leading to a bit of frustration.
Well, certainly not a mid-table team, a team doing much better. RB Leipzig. Paul T is asking, with their defense looking solid as ever, their midfield having enough creativity to break down smaller sides, and Nagelsmann's talent as a manager, could Leipzig give Bayern a challenge if one of their many talented forwards starts scoring some goals? Well, the if is here the word that's doing some heavy lifting, because I don't think they've really been able to replace Timo Werner and Schick. They are working very hard to score goals. They are scoring goals from midfield. But I think what's missing is the kind of striker that helps you on a day when perhaps you don't create a lot of stuff. When you just maybe are a bit more one-dimensional and you just put one or two crosses in, and there is this guy who just scores goals and saves the points for you. Of course, very, very difficult to find that type of striker. Yusuf Poulsen is a decent striker, but perhaps not quite at that level. And so far, Sørloth has not been affected. He missed a penalty to really put the icing on a cake in a negative sense. Is that a thing? Can you have a bad icing on a cake? I mean, a rotten cherry on top of his form, because he's still not off the mark. Christoph, my sense is that Leipzig have to play good football to score, which perhaps in this season is going to be tougher than in others.
So next weekend we have the big match between RB and Bayern. And when you look at what's going on this week, Bayern has to travel to Atletico Madrid, but in a way they have an easy game because they already qualified for the next round, where RB is desperately fighting to get into the next round of the Champions League. So they will lose some energy there. And as you rightly said, they need more energy to win matches. So this game against Bielefeld was hard fought, and they even could concede an equalizer shortly before the end. And if Sørloth, for example, had converted the penalty you were already mentioning, it would be they could have spared a lot of energy, and this energy question is I think one of high importance in this season with a very dense calendar, and I think it speaks against RB as a serious title contender.
I agree, although Bayern themselves are really running out of steam, out of energy. They look very, very spent.
I think there is an interesting point to make. If you compare Jürgen Klopp with Hansi Flick, Jürgen Klopp, who is raging against TV and scheduling and everything right now, And he has a point because he is frustrated from the lack of recovery time and frustrated by injuries and so on. But we have a very similar situation with Bayern Munich, also four players after the weekend may be injured. We have to see that. But Hansi Flick is keeping his stiff upper lip and not complaining at all. We have to take the situation as it is. And I think it's very important right now that a coach keeps this line, take the situation as it is, because it doesn't help you to complain about it. It's a waste of energy in a way, and it opens some back doors to your players. And so I find it very impressive how Hansi Flick is dealing with the situation right now, where he also had a lot of reasons to complain about it.
What you're saying is, if you tell the players that they're tired, they feel tired.
Yeah, I mean, if you tell them they are fresh while they are tired, they won't be fresh. But if you also tell them, yeah, you're tired, I understand that, it doesn't help them.
Well, Praveen is asking, why do you hate Bayern? He's not asking you, Christoph, he's asking me.
You don't hate Bayern.
I don't hate Bayern.
I also don't hate Bayern, but it's if you have a team in your league that is dominating so much, it's leads to a certain frustration, because in a way it makes the league more boring than it should be. And it's a long story how Bayern became so dominant, and it's all also has partly to do how they managed to influence the decision making and, for example, the distribution of wealth in the Bundesliga, and that almost every time went into their favor, and that is frustrating all the time. So yeah, I'm it's not hate. I mean, I don't hate anybody, but it's more frustration and the role that Bayern played in creating this frustration.
Yeah, I can understand that, even though I feel slightly different. Parimal A is asking, hello Rafa, what has changed for Bayern to perform badly in the XG metrics? Is their dream run coming to an end? Well, I love an XG question. And this is a reference to Bayern, I think, now having 3 out of 4 games with a worse XG, something that had only happened before in Hansi Flick's time until recently. So I guess it just shows that Bayern are not playing well, even though the results are still holding up by and large. They're struggling to create chances. They're struggling to contain oppositions. The high line is not really working because the energy isn't there to put the kind of pressure on the team that they want. If they fall deep, they're not quite as comfortable absorbing that pressure. And of course, they have injuries as well. With Joshua Kimmich, trademark quote, the most irreplaceable manager in football, by Christoph Biermann, not being there, that will have a negative impact. So I think the XG is not really telling us anything that we can't see with our own eyes. Bayern are just really short of their best. And I wouldn't be surprised if their dream run in the Champions League, as far as winning every single game for 15 now in a row, or is it 16? Oh, I lose track, might come to an end against Atletico. And if, indeed, they might actually lose against Leipzig at the weekend, although Leipzig have their own issues, as we just talked about. Aviman S wants to know, what odds would you give to Alaba staying at Bayern? It should be noted he has not looked as great at his centre-back role in the past month. Well, I don't think his slight diminished form has anything to do with the uncertain contractual situation. It's something that he's taken in his stride so far. But of course, it might not help at some level when you don't know, and when your club has told you that they no longer want you to renew your contract, even though they've sort of left a slight way back into this by saying, oh, you never know, that the door's not fully closed. I think that Alaba will leave. I don't see things changing unless he finds himself without any suitable offer, which is not impossible, but unlikely for someone who's out of contract in the summer and can therefore be fairly cheap, even if you consider the high wages. So I think somebody will take him. But of course, he in the past has made it known to his advisors that he wants to go to Spain rather than England. And who knows, Real Madrid or Barcelona, or even Atletico Madrid, might not be in the market for him. And then he has to reconsider. Does he want to go to the Premier League? Does he want to play for Chelsea, who have made an approach in the past? Does he want to go maybe play for Liverpool if they're interested, although he wouldn't necessarily fit the age profile? And he might still decide that Bayern is actually his preferred destination, as far as you can talk about destination or a place that you are actually already have arrived at. But I'd be surprised if he still ends up at Bayern next season. Christoph, we have some really interesting questions here about the national team and the 50+1 rule, but one more about a club. Martin van Socker, great name, not sure it's his real one, says, will Favre take the next step and contend for Europe in the next few years?
I think they have a good chance because my impression is that Sven Mislintat, whom we have been praising already several times here on this pod, has put together a really interesting squad with a lot of young talents, and they managed to extend some contracts during the last week, for example, with Nico Gonzalez, the Argentinian striker, whom Leeds United, for example, wanted to sign before the start of the season. And so they are not the normal team that comes up from the second division. And they're playing very interesting, nice to watch football under Pellegrino Materazzo, who was also an excellent choice for becoming Stuttgart coach. So I think there can be a lot of optimism in around VfB Stuttgart for things to come in the future, because it's not just a good team, it's a team, it's the youngest in the Bundesliga, and and we can expect more good things to come.
Optimism in Swabia, that's not something
I mean, I'm not a Swabian. I think if I would be a Swabian, I would wrap it in a lot of pessimism, what could go wrong. So
indeed. Okay, now we have some interesting German FA and German football questions, touching about slightly wider subjects. Patrick A is asking, so why is Germany's youth talent pool so much behind those of France, Spain, England, and even Belgium all of a sudden? This is a really good question, and it's one that the German FA and the clubs are increasingly grappling with. I think one of the explanations that I've seen and has been put forward is that the German youth system as it stands is too much focused on collective football, on making sure that players are tactically very well-versed and play together in a team that can win stuff, that the coaches are very much focused on winning, because if you win a lot at a young age as a youth coach, then you have chances of getting promoted and, you know, become a Bundesliga coach, as we've seen with the likes of Tuchel and so on. And that there's a lack of individual attention and a lack of kind of real football being played, that it's too much, you know, game situations and not enough many, many touches, smaller pitches, the kind of street player football that breeds these amazing individuals that we're talking about. Christoph, do you think that this is the issue? And if yes, what can be done about it?
It is the issue. I mean, when the German FA started to turn things around around 2000, where they developed these Nachwuchsleistungszentren, so these academies that every club had to have that plays professional football in Germany. there was a tremendous development. And one of the key problems in German football at that time were the absence of tactical ability. And maybe that was one of the reasons why the education of players was focused on that aspect of football. But now, as you said, there is a lot of tactical ability, but the individuality is lacking. So we don't have enough skillful player for the offensive part of the game, but also, for example, fantastic central defenders. It's somebody who is able to solve the individually solve problems when facing a dangerous opposing attacker. And it's known for a while. Clubs and the FA is working on that, but as we know, a problem is it takes some time if you see results. And in the meantime, I think there will be a major dip in years to come. We see it with the under 21 team, where Stefan Kunz, who is the coach of it, is openly complaining about the quality of the players. And we, when you look at some of the players, they at the most have average qualities to play in the Bundesliga, but you don't see the future national players in them. So we will have some problems in the years to come.
And what about our current problems, Christoph? The McNuggets is asking, is Löw still in charge of the national team only because of a lack of alternatives? Are the DFB mulling a change? If yes, who apart from Rangnick can be an option? Too many questions, I guess, but would really want to know. And I think we can combine that with Super D Crazy 03's questions. Question of, with the latest Bild report stating that the trio will be called in June by Löw if things fail further in March and not in March itself, what's your opinion about how the DFB committee will react to this? The trio here is a reference to Thomas Müller, Mats Hummels and Jerome Boateng, and the DFB committee, I think it's a presidential board that are in charge of, well, either leaving Löw in position or getting rid of him or attaching all sorts of conditions. There's big showdown talks happening this week. Christoph, let's talk about first about the return of Hummels and Boateng and Müller. Is this a bit of a red herring? It feels to me that's an easy way to attack Löw, but perhaps not the right one, because I think those problems actually go a lot deeper. Yes, Thomas Müller would help you to play a pressing game that isn't been played at the moment. I think he would give you organization, which is missing. He'd give you personality, which perhaps is a bit missing, and intelligence. But I don't see him changing all the issues that surround the team. And at the back, yes, Mats Hummels is still a very good player, but would he make the big difference? Would Jerome Boateng, with the injury issues, would it make a difference? I'm less convinced. I feel that this is just something that people latch onto if they want to criticize Löw, but actually there are other more problematic issues of his tenure.
So last week, Süddeutsche Zeitung made a very nice joke about the situation of the German national team, because we have a saying in something that's said very often when there are problems between a coach and the team is that it's asked, is the team, the coach still connecting to the team, and they turned it around and were asking, is the team still connecting to the coach? Because Jogi Löw sometimes makes the impression to be so remote, so far away from everybody, not only literally hiding somewhere in the southwest corner of Germany and close to Freiburg, but also in general, very often not visible at football matches and so on, and also remote in his appearance. And I think there is a point to that. In a way, especially after this terrible defeat against Spain, I had the impression that, yeah, the time is over in a way. The A story has come to an end, a story have been told often enough, and now it needs some change. But I think there won't be change this week. I would, or at least I would be surprised. And I think we will see a change after the European Championship.
Yeah, things you touch even ask, can anyone still connect with Löw, just the team, because of his aloofness? If they don't make a change now, if they consider him to be still worthy of being given another chance to sort this out, do you think that they will have some kind of agreement, whether that's official or secret, that he will step down after the Euros? And if so, who is next? And if so, can they keep that secret, or will it inevitably leak if they want to keep it secret? It seems to me a very difficult proposition, even if that is the condition of him to continue right now.
However they will solve it, I think it would be difficult to decide now that he will leave after the European Championship. Maybe it would, if they do, maybe it would even make sense to say it openly. I think nobody would need to be afraid that you have a lame duck then as a national coach, because everybody wants to play for Germany, and it's for limited time, and you only meet again in March for the first time then. So I think I said it here before, my number one candidate for replacing Löw is actually Stefan Kunz, the under 21 coach. So, because it, in a way, it fits the logic of the German FA, with where you tend to have people that come from your own system. In a way, it's also true with Löw, who was the assistant of Klinsmann before, and many others, Bertie Vogts being a youth coach, and so on. He also has a pedigree as a national team player, and won the European Championship in England with Germany, and also he is a different kind of person. He is more of a, I would say, in a way, a traditional football coach. He is also open to many new ideas, and so my impression is that could fit well.
Would be an interesting choice. Ralf Rangnick, perhaps the most highly rated of the contenders, but as you're alluding to, Christoph, maybe a bit of a fear that he would come in with his own ideas, where Kunz is much more compliant and would be probably happy just to coach the team.
With Rangnick, you always have the feeling that he doesn't only come in to coach the German national team, but run through all the offices and moving chairs around and deciding on what's on the walls and so on, because he has this holistic approach to everything, and maybe that's a bit too holistic for the German FA.
Well, tactically, I'd be much happier to see Rangnick in charge, I think, than Stefan Kunz, who's been always very good-natured, as Süddeutsche put it, but perhaps hasn't quite the, certainly doesn't have the same pedigree.
As far as
coaching teams.
That's true. But on the other hand, side, I'm a big fan of pairing of the pairings of coaches teams. So you can also have your super tactic guru in his coaching team. I think that would also work well. There are enough of these young guys even within the German FA.
Finally, we have a question that I think has often been asked of the Bundesliga, for those who find it difficult to understand why it is that we don't have more Bayern Munichs, why that there is such a resistance to takeovers, to outside investment, and it's coming from Baris K. He's asking, in Germany there's a hatred towards those who circumvent 50+1. Are teams expected to just continue to be rubbish, even if there is an alternative available? And is 50+1 seen to be holding German teams back in Europe? Or is it a case of, well, so be it, as long as 50+1 isn't touched? Do you want to have a go at this, Christoph, first?
I think this argument that teams are rubbish until the big money man comes in and leads them into the land of glory and milk and honey and whatever and trophies is slightly wrong because we've seen, and Schalke is a fantastic example of that, that money alone is not what the whole story is about, because Schalke had a lot of money from the Champions League, for example, and they blew it. And I think there are loads of examples from England where owners spent a fortune and didn't get anything out. So I think you can develop teams, and Borussia Mönchengladbach, for example, is a fantastic example of what you can do over many years and where you can get your club without any outside investors. So I think German football is and will be competitive in the future also without it, because very often, I mean, it's only a one-off, and it might help you for a short while. But it doesn't have necessarily the a lasting impact, and it would change the footballing landscape completely, because we in Germany we have a different history of what football and football clubs are and what they mean to us, and I think that system would be destroyed, and maybe that wouldn't help and wouldn't be accepted not only by a few ultra radicals, but also would chase away a lot of ordinary football fans.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I would add to it that there's a number of issues with how this new football would jar with Germans' views. Yes, of course, everyone wants their club to be competitive, but not at any price. If you ask a mid-table team if they want to trade the membership model and the control and the accountability and the transparency and the relationship that they have with the club for big trophies, for competitiveness, for superstar players, right now the answer would be no. That's a price that people wouldn't be prepared to pay. I think there's a principle behind this, that people feel that this is their club and they don't want to sell it to someone who can then do whatever they want. And then it's a case of getting lucky with an owner that is rich enough and clever enough. And you have no way of addressing that issue, as you can see with clubs who have been saddled with bad owners who are stuck. In Germany, if there's a chairman that you don't like, and you feel the club is going the wrong direction, you can vote them out. You can make changes. You can stand yourself and say, I'm going to take over the club. I'm going to lead the club forward. And while that might be an extreme and slightly romantic view of the democratic nature of club control, it is still, as a bottom line, as a fail-safe option, it is still always there. And I think for people that is very, very important, much more important than dreaming of trophies and of, you know, being the subject of sugar daddy money. The other thing I think is that there's also a sense of realism. I think if Mainz were to believe that somebody from Russia or Saudi Arabia or America would come in and give them €1 billion, it wouldn't really last, because if that were the case, then somebody with €2 billion is going to buy the more attractive, bigger club, Frankfurt, and someone with €10 billion is going to buy Munich. So if you open up all the clubs to invest the money, you'd have an arms race, but if eventually it would still be won by those who are most attractive. And I think it's extremely unlikely to see a Manchester City or even a Chelsea emerging in Germany without then the bigger clubs hitting back by getting even more money in. I think the picture is slightly skewed, because what we've seen with Chelsea, but Chelsea came up at a time when United were saddled with an owner who was not prepared to put any money in, a very unusual situation, and Liverpool themselves were about to go into a financial crisis otherwise, I think we'd seen a much different reaction, with more money coming into Liverpool and Man United and some of the more established clubs, and actually lessening that Chelsea effect and also that Manchester City effect years later. So these are my explanations, but I think it's important to understand that it's not a lack of ambition. It's not people saying, I'm happy to be rubbish, as you put it, Barry, so I'm happy never to win anything. It's just that the alternative is seen as something that is just not attractive enough to lose all the things that make it very special to be a football fan in Germany.
And if I may add something here, I think maybe in years to come we will see a development as there is so much money, especially from the US, that wants to be invested into football, that they're going for the Bundesliga to become minority owners. And I think that might work well emotionally, because everybody is feeling that the club still has the control over what's going on. And it could be a real smart investment. And with smart investment, I mean that these minority owners might also help clubs with knowledge, with international connection or whatever to help them develop. Because I think there are a lot of clubs that where there is space to develop too. And I think this is going to happen in maybe even in the next months, that we discuss of minority owners at smaller clubs or mid-table clubs, and that could also give them a boost without changing the landscape of German football completely.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility, although minority shareholders sometimes have a habit of wanting the power anyway, even though they're not technically the majority shareholders, but the money talks. But we'll watch the space. We'll see how things go. Thank you very much, Christoph, for being my guest today again. And thank you very much, listeners, for all your questions and for paying attention to what we had to say. I hope you're back with us next week when we look back on Bayern and Leipzig and all sorts of other interesting stuff in the Bundesliga. See you then. Bye-bye.